Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver, and I am very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes, and we're going to start soon, so please take your seat, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair. And if possible, sit with your feet flat on the floor, unless that hurts, in which case, don't do it. And also, happy holidays. Holidays are weird. I will just speak for myself. There is a lot of busyness and a lot of space and a lot of expectation. And on good days, a lot of delight. And on other days, a lot of sadness. And sadness is very understandable. It's very difficult to make sense of what is happening in the world. And also there can be, of course, things connected to family and gatherings and memories and traumas and expectations and all the things that are, again, completely understandable. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, let's not try to push sadness away. Let's not leave sadness out of the equation or imagine that it is the sign of a problem. It actually isn't. It is the sign of an opportunity. And I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. So, once I was reading an article about the great feminist icon, Gloria Steinem, who married late in life and was married briefly. Her husband died. And a journalist was interviewing her and said, "You must be depressed." And she said, "I'm not depressed. I'm sad." And he said, "What's the difference?" And she said, and I am paraphrasing, so forgive me, Gloria Steinem, if you're watching, call me, because I love you. "When you're depressed, nothing has any meaning. And when you're sad, everything does." So when we encounter feelings of sorrow, which sometimes express as sadness and crying, sometimes express as rage, sometimes express as dullness or numbness, the understandable impulse is to push it away. But my observation and my experience is that when we push away sadness or try to transform it into something more positive, quote unquote, sometimes you got to do that. And we got to be practical and we can't wallow. But at the same time, when we shut the door to sadness, we are also shutting the door to compassion because they have the same gate. Further, I've noticed that when I turn away from my sadness, it converts itself into despair. But when I turn towards it, it becomes an open heart. And as you know, this is called the Open Heart Project, and that's not an accident. Because it is only with an open heart, which doesn't mean a nice heart or a kind heart or a goody-goody heart. It means a heart that is willing to feel, that is willing to acknowledge others, that is willing to walk through the world with fewer preconceived notions and a greater sense of presence. Now, we can't do that when we're walled off. So how do we soften the wall or take the wall down? But let me just say first, I'm going to offer you some ideas. But first, I want to say, and I want you to listen, please, very hard to what I'm about to say. If you are experiencing trauma, acute or chronic, this advice may not apply because trauma is its own category of suffering. And it not only may it not be helpful to continue to open and soften and cry, it could be harmful. So you have to be the judge, and I hope that you will hear what I just said and be kind to yourself and not try to push yourself. Because some Buddhist lady said it'd be nice to have a more open heart. Forget about that. Take care of yourself. So how do we maintain an open heart? Well, it's always opening and closing, so... Well, we can first acknowledge that. No problem. Ordinary, natural. Second, we're fixing to do it. It's called the practice of meditation. Because when we sit, we relax with ourselves as we are. And as we do so, whatever we may have been holding at arm's length comes forward because the arms are dropped, metaphorically speaking. And quite often, that something that we're not allowing ourselves to feel for whatever reasons is fatigue, because everybody's really tired, because everybody's working really hard. Sometimes it's difficult situations that you realize you haven't thought about. And just as often, it's something that you would rather not feel. Cool. Again, be gentle. Don't push yourself. But whether we want it to or not, this practice continues to soften our boundaries. It continues to soften the divide between self and other. Sometimes that's beautiful, and sometimes it really isn't. So how do we strengthen ourselves? How do we go forward with the intention, should one want to continually soften and open and offer and love without, you know, becoming overwhelmed or despairing? So I have some suggestions for you. And they are connected to this practice. So it's very understandable that one would think that this practice of meditation is being done for a reason. And it is, because we all come to meditation for some reason. Nobody's like, my life is perfect. Let me try meditation. We're here because we're sad, because we're angry, because we've experienced a loss, because we have relationship problems or whatever the things are that we have. And those are all good reasons to come to meditation, and it will help you. But the benefits go so far beyond conventional self-help. And often when meditation is presented, it's presented for its conventional benefits, which are vast. Again, I'm not denying that. But what's left on the table are the spiritual benefits of awakening, deepening of compassion, and even perhaps complete liberation from suffering, aka enlightenment. That's left on the table. And that's a pity. So nobody has to be a Buddhist or religious or have any beliefs to examine what is left on that table. And what I want to suggest to you now are some ways to keep our practice in the realm of the spiritual or the sacred, which doesn't mean there's no self-help, but let's see if we can move it at least to the middle, so that we're getting the benefits, which you deserve, and I hope you will experience immediately. But we're also willing to examine what is sacred and transformational about this practice, because that is how we come to learn the power of sadness. Because on this table, they're saying, get rid of that sadness. Is it a problem? Sure, it is. This table is saying, hold on, there's a wisdom in there. Meaning is in sadness. Truth and love are also in sadness. So how do we keep our practice sacred? That was my very long windup to answer my own question. How do we keep our practice sacred rather than or in addition to self-help? So three suggestions. The first suggestion is called make offerings. So before you sit down to practice, wherever you are, it's very traditional to make an offering. If you go into any temple or shrine room or church, usually in the front is a table with things on it, like this. Those things are offerings, and they tend to be connected to the sense perceptions, things that smell good or look beautiful, and so on. So that's what's back here. These are my offerings. And if anyone's interested, I'm happy to explain what they are, but at the same time, it doesn't matter, because what you offer is up to you. And so it can be nice to have a little table with a picture of someone or something you love. You could light a candle, you could light incense, you could do the things that are traditionally considered offerings, and those are great. But what's most important is the mind that you bring to the offering of the offerings, which is a mind of generosity, of giving. Please, powers that be, wisdom of the earth, gods and goddesses, however you conceive of the greater wisdom that is absolutely inseparable from your own wisdom, spoiler alert, you ask, you say, here's something for you. I'm offering this. And the best offering, you don't need candles or incense unless you want, is who you are right now. Not who you wish you were or you think you should pretend to be, but who you are. So who am I right now? Right now, I am a little sad. I still kind of waking up. I don't know what time it is, maybe 8 a.m. Hopeful for the coming year. And happy because I don't have a headache, because I have chronic headaches. And right now, I don't. So, yay. So all of that, that's my offering. So you could stop and take a moment and go, who am I right now? Meaning, what do I feel? What's my mood? Where's my mind? And just have some sense within yourself of that going out to mix with whatever you think is the greater wisdom, whatever you would call it. It's up to you. You mix your mind through offerings with wisdom itself. Don't take my word for that or anything. So you experiment, please. And then the second thing, also done before you practice, the third thing is after we practice, is called request blessings. And I love this one. So who are you asking, who are you offering to, and who are you asking to bless you? So you, my friend, are part of a lineage or lineages. No question, because you didn't get here in a space capsule, as far as I am aware. You came here from a lineage of a culture, a religion, a country, a neighborhood. All of that's here. It's all part of you. And in addition to whatever gave rise to you yourself, there are things that you aspire to and beings that you really admire. Whether because you know them and they taught you something really helpful, or because you are just a fan of their work, or you read something, or you know something about them, and you're like, that's the best. That's the best. So take a moment and think about, who are these people? Maybe you're of the lineage of artists. Maybe you're of the lineage of parents. Maybe you're of the lineage of activists or tiny home dwellers or engineers. Maybe you're of the lineage of people who have no lineage. That's a lineage too. So whatever you connect to, whatever inspires you the most, that is your lineage. Because otherwise you would not feel this pull towards those people or that way of thinking. And it can be anything. Now, traditionally, and I'm a Buddhist, so I have a traditional way of doing this, you request their blessings basically by saying their names. And there are various chants that basically are just listing the names of the lineage holders for my lineage, in my case. One of the chants begins, and this doesn't have to mean anything to anyone but me, great Vajradhara, Tilo, Naro, Marpa, Mila, Lord of Dharma, Gampopa. Those are lineage holders of the Kagyu lineage of Tibetan Buddhism. And for almost 30 years, when I sit down, I say their names. In addition, other names, Padmasambhava, Yeshe Tsogyal, and so on. And there's a sense of invoking their presence. So you think of who would you name? Whose presence are you invoking? Now, this is not woo-woo, because as far as I can tell, these beings, they're here with you. I mean, they're not here, can't see them, but they're here. They gave rise to you. You would not be who you are without them. You would not think the way you do without them. So somehow they are also present, not in a woo-woo way, but in some soulful way. So when I practice, often I think of my Buddhist teachers over here, most particularly my most beloved, Tulku Tundup Rinpoche. Taught me so much. Everything, in fact. As well as Padmasambhava and Gampopa and all the others I just named. And over here, I think of beings that I just think are like, I don't know them, but wow. Bob Dylan. I think he's great. I don't know him personally. The poet Rilke. Honestly, I think of the blues guitar player Otis Rush, who breaks my heart every time I hear him in a really good way. I think of Claudio Naranjo, one of the progenitors, you could say, of the Enneagram, which I'm very invested in. They're here too. I want to learn. I want to keep learning from them. So in the requesting of blessings, you could say something traditional, and it could be about Christian figures or Jewish figures or Wiccan figures, whatever you do. And you ask them to help you. It can be very simple. It can take a moment, or you can spend as much time as you want. But it's basically, I hold your lineage. Grant your blessing so that I will follow your example. That's a line from the same chant I was just mentioning. But there's that sense. Help me. Be with me. Show me how to continue to learn. So you make offerings, you request blessings, and then you do your practice, whether it's 1 minute or 1 hour, you know, 10 minutes is really good. And then at the end of your practice, you do the third step, which is called to dedicate the merit, merit, M-E-R-I-T. So it's a little bit like offerings. Offerings are at the beginning, you go, here, I'm giving you this, help me, please. And then at the end, you think of what you got, and you offer that too. So in our practice, you get all sorts of things. Sometimes on good days, you get insights and, you know, delights. And on other days, you get bad, you know, difficult feelings or boredom. And you're like, oh, I'm really bad at this. I don't know if I even meditated for 1 second. Okay, whatever it is, it's no problem. But there's a sense, again, of wrapping that up and offering it so that it can benefit all beings, not just you. But all beings includes you. So it's not all beings except you, which I kind of thought for like the first 10 years of my practice. So you could take a moment and just say very simply to yourself, I hope my practice can help others. That's like the best dedication of merit. The traditional that I have said for now over 30 years, which I'm going to say right now to indicate that this talk is concluded and we're going to sit. Actually, there's one more thing I want to say. Is by this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. May I free all beings. So to conclude my remarks, I want to go back to the beginning and the power and potency of sadness as a gateway to compassion and sacred view. When we keep trying to push sadness away, and there's a lot to be sad about, or turn it into something more, you know, conventionally workable, we lose a lot. We lose meaning. We lose love. So please think about this, and if you wish. And the great and controversial and brilliant and who knows what he was, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, once said, the greatest elegance is vulnerability. So perhaps we have a little insight into what he might have meant by that. The greatest elegance. Elegance. Grace, beauty, everything is vulnerability. Don't take his word for that or mine. Think about it. See what you find. And let's sit. Happy holidays. Also, you're great, and I really love you. Begin your practice, please, by letting go of whatever it is I just said or whatever you thought about it, and just relax. Relax. Relax here means allow rather than feel calm. Unless you do feel calm, just allow. You're in your body. You have your breath. You have your mind. That's all we need. So the hands rest on the legs, palms down. You're sitting up straight. because you possess indestructible elegance. And the front body is very soft because you also possess an ending vulnerability. So it's all right here. Let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed. The lips and teeth can be slightly parted. And relax all the muscles of speech. The jaw, the tongue, the throat, the inclination to speak, you can also relax because you don't need it right now. That's my favorite part. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold. But otherwise, just normal breathing, whatever you were doing before I said breathing, that. The eyes are open, and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front, and let the eyes soften. See if you can direct your gaze to the middle distance. And as you may know, we sit with our eyes open because we're practicing being awake. Because it's when we are awake that we can bring benefit to this world and to ourselves and find more love and more wisdom. That's my theory anyway. Relax your brow. Notice that you're breathing and let your attention rest on the feeling of the body breathing rather than stepping away to observe it. Feel the inhale and the dissolve of the exhale. And then it will start all over on its own. You do not have to crank anything up. The next in-breath will just start, and you feel that coming in and releasing out. Coming in, releasing out. Let your mind be as it is. That is among the most profound instructions. We're not trying to get anywhere or change anything. Thoughts will come and go, period, dot. There is no thought that has come that has not also gone. So seems to be how it's designed. So you just sit as thoughts come and go. While your primary attention is on the breath, and this burble is happening back here, not a big deal. And should you notice that you burbled away, you became absorbed in a line of thought to the point that you have forgotten about your breath, like that extreme. No more breath. I'm thinking. Cool. Notice that. Label that moment thinking. See that for what it is. Gently let go. Like you just open your fist and something just blows away. And equally as gently, come back. There's a little journey back to the breath and begin again. Feeling the body breathe. And that's all there is to it. So we'll sit together in silence for a little while until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Very important. Thank you for practicing with me. It means a lot to me. And thank you for practicing together. And happy holidays. And I want to tell you, if you'll be getting this on December 25th, whenever you watch it, I do not know. But in the Open Heart Project this week, we have a very wonderful free program called Building a Mindful New Year that begins on December 26th and ends on December 31st. 6 days, 6 teachers, 6 one-hour talks on the 6 paramitas or transcendent actions. And these are wonderful teachers and me. Zen teachers, Vipassana teachers, people trained as I was in Tibetan traditions. But anyway, they're talking about generosity, discipline, patience, exertion, meditative absorption, and wisdom. So please, there'll be a link somewhere here to register. And even if it's a few days in, you can still watch the previous recordings. It's a really good way to enter the new year. And then on January 1st, we have a 21-day meditation challenge. So every day, you receive an email from me with audio meditation instruction, 10 minutes the first week, then 15 minutes, and then 20 minutes the third week. And there's also a short little video in there, less than 2 minutes on each day with a little meditation tip. And it's a great way, if I may say, to enter the year with a sense of stability in your practice. It costs $54, or it's free if you are a member of the Open Heart Project Sangha, which costs $27 a month, so you do the math. And there'll be links here to all of that. Also, in the 21-day challenge, we have 2 check-ins midway through and at the end, just to see how it's going, how can I support you, what are you noticing, et cetera, and so forth. So I rouse the aspiration in 2024 that our practice together could deepen in whatever way serves you best. Thank you. See you next week.